With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are now in tune to the Chat and Shit podcast. Guess what? Guess what? This is a podcast. And it's called Chatting Shit, boy.
Here he is, H-U-G-O.
Ah, that's me.
How you doing?
Good, man. Good. Yeah. Full of energy, ready to go.
Oh, God. The ambassador for UNICEF.
Yeah. Call me that. A lot of people call me that.
Well, look what I'm wearing.
Nando's shirt.
Ambassador for Nando's, yeah.
Wow.
Do you know what they call me? The people that work there? A Nandoka.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
What does...
Well, it just means you work behind the tills. I don't. Obviously, they sent this for me. But yeah, shout out Nando's, man.
But if you did work at Nando's, would you work on the grill or at the till?
You know me, man. I like throwing it down in the kitchen, but not when it's for other people. So I'd work on the till.
That's the answer I wanted.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'd do the drink refilling.
I'll be front of house, just stepping in as they're chewing. Is everything all right? Yeah. I'll tell you someone that doesn't work at Nando's.
Go on.
Our guest. Yep. Today's guest is someone very special. Someone with an ear more tuned than most to seeking out the finest in musical notes. Someone whose eclectic musical taste has helped educate the feeble listener's ears.
He's been
dubbed as the most connected man in the UK music industry by GQ, and our generation's answer to Giles Peterson by me. A DJ slash producer who holds the greatest mystery known to man. What does the B in his name really stand for? Benji B. What are you saying, man?
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, man.
I always think with you that I don't know whether I'm starstruck by the actors or the characters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, like, you can go both if you want.
Thanks. I have both. Yeah. I remember being at Bestival, 5 years ago, yeah. 6 years ago, something like that. And going backstage, it was probably raining. I think it was raining.
I remember
it was Bestival.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you for the first time in IRL. Yeah. And and it's funny, isn't it? Because your relationship with people that you've spent a lot of time with on series, like if you go and watch a film and you come out of a film, yeah. you think, oh, it's Joe Pesci, or you think, oh, it's Rob, you know what I mean? You don't think it's that character. But if you watch The Wire or you watch like a series, then you kind of, I remember the first time I saw Idris Elba in real life, and it was sort of pre-Idris Elba, you know, knowing him from anything other than The Wire.
Yeah,
exactly. And it was actually in the toilets at sounds dodge. It was in the toilets at One Extra. I remember I was washing my hands. I looked up and he was washing his hands in the basin next to, and I was like, "String! Stringer! It's Stringer Bell." And he looked at me, and then he cackled and then answered in his like London accent, which blew my head off because I'd never heard him talk.
Yeah.
Not a Stringer Bell. And so, you know, you get so attached to characters, don't you? But anyway,
that was
an abstract start to our chat. But it's the same with you. It's like that thing that you have with is like, is Larry David Larry from Curb, or is he Larry from
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or is or The Office or something like that.
I just assume Larry David is like that in real life, but I mean...
Yeah, me too. I think he's written something that's basically about who he'd like to be every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
for
yeah,
the person
yeah.
that he is inside, but what he really wants to
it's,
say.
It's
when
what's
he's in
his mind, yeah.
I think it's all who we'd all like to be a little bit.
Yes, Stanley.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
What a G.
You know what? I remember meeting you that time. That was in a... We were in... They had those weird sort of shipping containers where everyone chilled in when it's raining and just like the little green room sort of area at Bestival, wasn't it? Like a weird fucking red. Yeah, I remember, man. And Jammer was waved and it was a crazy, weird place. But it was sick, man.
And I just
had
a really weird DJ set because my USB corrupted on the way in. It was funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, that was a good one, that one. I remember I had a... I got this this driver that was driving me at the time and he had his car... That had like a, he had a converter that you could plug your laptop into. Do you know what I mean? So instead of being able to charge your phone, you could charge your laptop. So you could sort your set out on the way.
Right.
And sick.
Obviously, best of all, you know, Isle of Wight and all that.
Mission.
And I remember the whole, mission. Yeah. But anyway, so I spent the whole trip preparing a whole new thing, new set, from scratch and allowed that amount of time. And right as we pulled to the stage, there was one tiny little speed bump outside the actual tent. We just went over it and it said, you know when you get that little thing on your Mac that says, oh, your USB's not been ejected correctly or whatever.
Man,
and I was like, minor, that you get that all the time. It's no big deal. Anyway, took it out and it said, oh, your device may be corrupted. How many times have you ignored that message? Like,
yeah, standard. Pull out game strong.
Yeah. Well, I thought.
But I, needless to say, I walked in and it was my club night's called Deviation. We did a Deviation takeover of this tent and I was playing either I think after or before I'd booked Ben UFO and Joy Orbison, who are both sick DJs, right, like proper, and they were playing back to back and they were smashing it and I had to step up after them, I remember, and I put both USBs in both CDJs and both of them were like no data or whatever, you know, empty
shit
in front of that feeling. Thing it's a horrible feeling and then you scramble for something that has folders like Notting Hill Carnival 2014 or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Or just
you're doing a Soca set.
Yeah.
I mean, I just remember, and I remember it was one of them classic ones, I'm sure you know from when you either do live shows or whatever, where you know it was whack, kind of. It wasn't very good, but everyone comes up to you and says, oh, I had a great time. So maybe it was good in the end. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember coming in to... The reason I'm telling you that story is because I remember coming into the backstage feeling a little bit like, you know, that feeling when you're just like, oh, that was not good in front, you know, at that peak time set. And then I saw you lot and my mood lifted. So there you go.
Amazing. Oh, that's sick, man.
Yeah, we had it once where we were testing out a new bit of equipment and basically the laptop kept crashing every five minutes and we had no backup and you could literally hear the Apple startup sound on the speakers in the club.
Was that Swansea?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Bruv, that's where I basically was wrecked. And I sort of turned David Brent and someone said something in the crowd. I went, who said that? And it was complete silence.
They went, you're shit.
Yeah.
And then you went, who said that?
Who the fuck said that? The worst thing you can say.
Oh, it was horrible, man.
And then we gave Asim the mic and we were like, just do some like stand up or something. He's like, I've never done stand up. And he was just like, how you doing, Wales? You all right? It's fucking painful.
Amazing.
Man.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Ask. If you don't ask, boy, you don't get. Ask.
Benji, obviously, it feels like we're in a different stage of a sort of locked down UK. But how have you been finding it, and what have you been doing to pass your time? Were you able to just carry on working the whole way through, doing your shows and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean,
from home or whatever.
The answer is like yes. Like I haven't stopped working, but obviously, as a DJ, like my entire DJ schedule, income.
Yeah.
Like whatever, completely gone, as it has for all of us. And it's a really interesting switch around, you know what I mean? Because it's gone from like that very complacent, spoiled juxtaposition of kind of, where am I this Friday? Oh, Amsterdam and then Rotterdam, or you know, then, or Manchester and then Leeds, or Miami then New York, or you know what I mean? And you kind of like that life of the airport being your home, your second home in a way, you know, seeing the airport more than anywhere else. And obviously that's, you know, that's not something to sniff at, but it's also not that glamorous a lot of the time, as you know.
Of course,
So it's been really interesting to me, because actually it's the first time I've spent this much time in one place probably since I was a kid. And also definitely the longest I've spent in my hometown since being an adult, for sure. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I've been in London since first week of March, and I just left for the first time last week, which for me is just like a new, it's weird and a new feeling, but also amazing, because I probably haven't had a body clock since about 1998.
That's what I'm saying though. Yeah, man. That's important, isn't it? Like,
It's weird having a body clock and like...
And do you feel like it's helped? I don't know if you even noticed this when everything's sort of 100 miles an hour and you're doing so many things, but have you noticed that it's sort of, I don't know, maybe your mental health is a little bit clearer now, kind of thing, or you've had time to reflect on things a bit more, or maybe that doesn't affect you?
I think the mental health thing has actually kind of been affected in the other direction by just the monotony of the same space and the isolation, because where I'm talking to you from now, I'm very blessed to have this space. It's my studio in London, and I come here every day. So to answer your question, I am definitely not one of those people that's like, so I've been learning Japanese, and I'm taking up the guitar. And you know, you talk to those people, don't you?
Yeah.
And all power to them.
But I'm a bit
jealous, to be honest, because...
Definitely not.
How is the answer? In a way, I think the intensity of doing... the show solo here, you know, has been a kind of a helpful anchor in terms of like schedule and stuff. But the meaning of it is kind of amplified, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to think back to the beginning of lockdown, but it almost felt like wartime.
Yeah, proper. 100%. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fucking surreal, man.
Yeah.
And at that time, I got made a key worker or whatever. Yeah. You know, so it was almost like... Not that you'd ever get stopped or anything, but if I did, I could be like, well, actually, I've got to...
I'm on my way to do some...
I've got to go and play some very rare 12 inches on the radio. It's very important. But in all seriousness, that period was mad, because I felt like I was the only person in London. It was weirdly enjoyable in a kind of weird way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to answer your question, no, it's been jam-packed, busy year.
Yeah.
I definitely spent a lot of time trying to make the radio good for people that needed it to be good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you have to turn around at a certain point and go, okay, I need... So I just took a week off.
Yeah.
For the first time since January, so I've just been going straight, as you know, because we've been trying to do this podcast for months. And so sorry about that.
That's cool.
That's a good problem to have, Benji, mate. Hey guys, it's Ron here, coming back at you like Cleopatra, trying out a new catchphrase. But I hope y'all guys enjoy the podcast, and remember, all the links will be down at the bottom. All the recos down at the bottom, and I hope y'all enjoy them. Apart from the times where you've had to be, you know, going down to the studio and stuff like that, you know, we all are still at home more than we would be. So have you got any recommendations, films, TV, music, reading?
Oh, man. You know? Now you're asking.
Yeah.
There's loads. I just watched, don't judge me, I watched a program on Sky One. First time I've done it.
Yeah.
But I watched Brave New World, because they advertised it so much to me that I gave in and watched it. And basically I watched it because I have to say that the reason I said don't judge me is not because it was Sky One. It was because it wasn't actually that good.
Right.
In terms of, so the disclaimer here is that from a kind of, you know, acting or the way it's made or the screenwriting, from all of those angles, I'm not saying rush to watch it. But from a concept angle, I find that stuff really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's basically an adaptation of Brave New World, the book, but it's based in New London, which is London after an apocalypse or a pandemic or whatever, right? Yeah. So something's come along and changed London, and it's like the society that springs up after that. And to live in the new society, the basis of it is that you have to be happy all the time. And in order to do that, they give you this soma drug, which is like this kind of like mood leveling drug that they take. So anytime they feel anything, or anytime they feel anything other than just sort of like sedated, they click one of these, right?
Right.
And it's like a big part. But the analogy is that for me, that Soma drug was basically Instagram.
Yeah.
Or the iPhone or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And there were loads of other sort of mad ideas in it that were really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was basically like not as good as Westworld, but a similar vibe. If you like Westworld, which I loved.
Yeah, I like
Westworld season
series.
Season two and three, whatever. Season one, great.
Yeah, season one was sick. I watched that. I don't know why I gave up.
Because it wasn't good, mate. Because it descended into...
Yeah, I sense it.
It descended into a sort of shoot 'em up, basically.
Okay.
Whereas the first one was kind of like... I don't know, the first one as a concept. So here's my take on Westworld. And no spoilers for anyone that hasn't watched it. Well, it kind of is. The hosts are us, right?
Yeah.
So Westworld, should we go into this much detail? Or you just wanted me to say watch Westworld, didn't you? Alan, you just wanted to.
He hasn't seen it.
You didn't want a breakdown of the show. You were just like, yeah, so what are your recommendations? And I'm like, well,
should we do a synopsis episode by episode?
That would be really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, God, he's going into the synopsis again. What's he doing?
I think I've had too much coffee.
No, that's sick,
Note
man.
Note to self, do when I do a podcast next time, get the tech sorted. And
I ain't seen it, but all these boys always talk about it. I know Hugo, you said you loved it. So Asim loved it as well.
Really,
so I need to check it, definitely, man.
I mean, it's a good time to revisit the classics. If you've never seen The Wire.
Yeah.
You know, The Wire is basically like the king of all of those shows ever, in my opinion.
I don't even want to say it, yeah? I've watched The Wire. I loved The Wire, but I watched only the first series. I got to the second series. This is about 7 years ago. I was a lot younger.
Yeah. I know what you're going to say already.
Yeah. And it was all political. I wanted the gangster shit, obviously. I was too
young. That's the whole point.
Yeah,
is that
I know.
Season two is supposed to be tough.
I know.
You've got to get through it.
Yeah.
Season two is when it goes to the docks, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I gave up on season
two. Nah, but listen to this, bruv. I was listening. This is what inspired me. I was listening to Action Bronson on a podcast today. And he was like, and he basically described me. He went, yo, people wanted to be all gangster and shit. He goes, that's the political shit. he's like, where do you think all that shit comes from? The ports. And I was like, listening to it like, fuck. Yeah, no, he's right, man. Fuck, I've got to get, so I'm getting back on it from tomorrow.
Well,
man.
I'm actually jealous at the idea that you're watching it for the first time.
Yeah.
I wish I could watch it through your eyes and brain for the first time.
You know what? I'll watch it as well. Because
should we do it together, Hugo, on
you know
Zoom?
What? You know what? I don't know how much. When do you like binge it, or do you do like bits and pieces?
I normally do two.
I'd probably do two, three or four or something. Yeah.
All right. Well, I might join you, but I'd have to start from season one because I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
I think I'd have to do that as well, bruv, because I'd want to bring myself back to that level. Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing, and also I think if I remember right, I think that some of the actors were amateur, like as in people.
They're really from Baltimore, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. And some of it was improvised. And I mean, it's the way I remember it is as a masterpiece.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like five seasons. And that goes back to the very first thing we're talking about today, which is that I'm so attached to who those characters were. I still don't accept those actors as other people.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of them have gone on to be superstars, like Idris Elba and
Omar, the bread at
prison. Omar, in my mind, he's DMX.
And, in my mind, he's like, when I read DMX's book,
he's
basically Omar,
He was supposed to play ODB in the in the biopic. I don't know what happened with that.
Yeah.
But that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen Boardwalk Empire...
I've seen that as well. That was amazing.
Yeah,
man.
He plays Chalky in that, which is, and Steve Buscemi's amazing in that.
Amazing.
Boardwalk Empire is amazing because all of these things that we're talking about are linked by the fact that they are about real things.
Yeah.
You know, The Wire is obviously inspired by real life in Baltimore in a certain era. And Boardwalk Empire, I learned so much about, I never knew about Atlantic City and the 20s and Prohibition and all that. And all of those gangsters in that, like Rothstein and all those people, they're all real names that you can
Google.
Stephen
Graham playing Al Capone and shit. How sick was that?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Amazing performance. Yeah.
That was really good.
I also, in lockdown, I went full Sopranos, man. I watched up to series 3 maybe 8 years ago.
No, that's a commitment.
And then
they're like... 10 series or something.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And some of them are quite slow as well. Some of the episodes are quite slow. But
it definitely
amazing,
requires patience that I didn't have when I was younger. I finished it lockdown as well.
Wow, that is That's a lot to get through.
I was going through like first time in my life where I had like anxiety and shit when I first watched it, maybe like 10 years ago. And so I had to stop because when he started getting the panic attacks and I was watching it, it's making me feel weird and shit. So like now I'm older and, you know, understand myself a bit more and I revisited it and amazing, man.
But didn't you find some sort of like reassurance in the fact that even Tony Soprano?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 100%. Like... Yeah, I'm basically Tony Soprano. Yeah.
I tell you what, on a dark one, dark, this is my opinion. That Rupert Murdoch shit, did you watch that?
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah, man. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I didn't. Fuck.
Mate, I don't want to bring the vibe down, but like the three part thing about the Murdoch dynasty, that was deep recently. I watched that.
I'd watch that.
Have you seen Succession?
It's so perfect that you asked me that now because that Murdoch thing makes you want to watch it because you realise that it is just straight up about that. Like it's not kind of based on that.
Yeah.
You watched The Social Dilemma yet? On Netflix?
Yeah, sick.
Nah, man, not yet. It's on the list.
I deleted everything off my phone for 3 days and then put it back on.
Exactly. Which reminds me, when you said books, the book I've just finished is a book called Digital Minimalism.
Right.
Which is about how to do what you just said or how to find your place in it. Like, it's not a question of let's all get Nokias and like... throw the, you know, which is something I tried. I tried that. I was like, go back to the Nokia, like it.
Yeah. I googled simple phones with just email on and there isn't one.
Benji, you went too far and tried to shove it up your ass like a trapper, innit?
If I can get it up my ass, then I won't use it.
Maybe I won't use it, yeah. No, but you know what? I do that every day. I don't shove my phone up my ass, but I delete Instagram and check it maybe twice a day, you know? And I wish I could carry on with that and maybe check it. Like,
I just turned all notifications off apart from...
Oh, yeah, fuck that. I got no notifications.
That's stage one, definitely.
Yeah.
But that book was good. I reread Natives, Akala, but I did it as an audio book because I read it before and obviously it's amazing and he's amazing. But then I got into Audible and I like ordering the books that are read by the person that wrote them. Because with Audible, it's like the voice can really piss you off. It can really throw... I can't even listen to some of them. You know what I mean? It's like, it's got to be right. But hearing him reading Natives, I just listened to him and I got through the book so quickly because it felt... It's the right intonation. It just doubles the meaning when I can hear him reading his own words. Natives is wicked. Everyone listening should read that.
I've got that book... I ordered it a few months ago, but I'm just getting through other books. But I might do the same thing. And I've done it with the Beastie Boys book.
No, I haven't read that. Actually.
Well, that's the same thing. It's got an audio version where it's written, read by them, obviously minus MCA, but read by them, but also all their celebrity mates that were part of it. So you've got like little bits from like, you know, Ben Stiller or whatever, like little bits reading. It's sick, man. They've done that really well.
There's a lot of reading going on this year, which has been great.
That's good, man.
I've got into the audiobook wave. I like it.
Yeah, same. Yeah, for sure.
We've got Audible.
That's for real. We've just done another series of Audible, isn't it?
His face is so funny. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was definitely an endorsement face.
Big up Audible, man. I'm going to get my garage turned into a studio. Thank you. Keep that in.
This is where we just simply ask and ask away.
Right, Benji, let's take it back, man. Where did everything start for you? Like, obviously it started with, I guess, just as simple as just like you just started DJing, right, back in the day?
Yeah.
So talk us through that, man. Like, what was your first, the first music you fell in love with? What sort of made you who you were back then?
I fell in love with music from day one, really. I was just obsessed with music even when I was a baby, when I was a kid.
Did you have a musical family?
Yeah, my dad had an amazing musical collection and is a musician. So I grew up with music being a very, you know, so I owe him a lot. And both my mum and dad supported music from day one. They weren't like the type of people that thought that was just a hobby or something.
Yeah.
They were like, you know, they supported creativity and stuff. So I'm very blessed.
Oh, that's really good.
I'm very grateful to them for that. But I fell in love with records in my early teens, I reckon.
Yeah.
Before that, I was in love with music,
yeah.
You know, buying cassettes. That's how old I am, yes.
And yeah.
Same, yeah. Man, same. What was your first tape?
I don't know what the first one was, but the tapes that got rinsed the most were like Public Enemy and, you know,
yeah.
Eric B and Rakim and yeah. like rap tapes. And then I had like old sort of like soul. There used to be these like soul compilation bootlegs you could buy down in like Camden and like yeah, places yeah. like that, that would have like all James Brown type, you know, all of that yeah, yeah. stuff, like sort of Diggers 101 stuff.
Yeah, classic.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
like yeah. my all the essential.
It was like, I think it was that like, slightly before our breaks, generation.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Our generation was like, for me, it would have been Snoop Dogg Doggy Style. You know, that was the generation right, we yeah. came up on. And then like the Public Enemy stuff was slightly before then, wasn't it?
Yeah. But Public Enemy was like, I wasn't even 10 yet. You know, that was like eight,
right.
nine
yeah, right. Got
years
you.
Old. I, yeah. That was, I just mean in terms of like remembering tapes that you played back to front in the
yeah,
Walkman.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You
yeah.
know, those albums where if you hear a song and then the song that's not after it on the album comes on, you're like, well, that's wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're so
yeah,
used,
yeah, yeah.
You're so used to it.
You know, it's
so,
yeah.
Order. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I used to buy pop 7 inches. I think I used to get 50p. A month or a week to go to Our Price because they used to have these singles that were discounted to 49p.
Yeah, Our Price
in the bin, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah. And so Our Price, I big up Our Price because yeah. I bought a lot of 7 inches. And the funny thing is, when you're that age, you don't discriminate between genre or style or anything like that. So I would buy like David Bowie or Madonna or whatever at the same time as listening to like Weather Report at home in my dad's
yeah.
collection or
yes.
What people would consider really sophisticated music, but you don't think of it at all like that. It's mm-hmm. the same thing for you know what I mean? So it started very early for me, but to answer the question about like where did it really get started with DJing, it's probably like 13-14 is when I fell in love with DJ culture and records and radio.
Where would you go to buy your like vinyls and stuff? Because I used to go yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
And what was the music of choice?
Jungle.
Yeah.
Would you go
yeah.
Black Markets?
Black Market and Unity Standard.
Yeah.
And then if you're feeling like a really like away trip, like yeah. not a home game but an away game,
yeah, yeah.
you'd go to Section 5 Kings Road.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that was kind of like, but I actually, you know, the funny thing is about London then is that I'd never been to the Kings Road until I went to Section 5.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can kind yeah, of man. Like live in these like, you live in the arteries of way of your life, don't you? You don't live in, you know, and I'd never spent any time in that part of town. So I remember trying to find Section 5 and I was like, oh my God.
That's like when I first went Croydon, like, yeah. I went Big Apple and I was like, that's the only reason
yeah.
I would go.
Oh, there's no need to go to Croydon unless you're, yeah, like at that time.
But Big Apple was amazing when I went in there. I was like, fucking hell, they got everything. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good vibe in there.
So yeah, like Soho was the pilgrimage.
Benji, sorry like, to interrupt. Sometime, where were yeah. you raised in London?
In North London, but I've got when my mum and dad split up, my mum was North and my dad was South. So I'm a rare Londoner that holds okay. dual passport.
Yeah,
I can claim both passports,
both sides. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice.
Yeah,
I guess that helps. I guess put together your sort of eclectic taste in different inspirations of like music cultures from London and stuff as well, right?
I appreciate about London so much and probably took for granted until, you know, you get older is realizing how distinctive the identity of different neighborhoods is.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? And how strong those identities are and how they have such a strong feeling. And then with the exception of places that have experienced radical change, like Hoxton,
sure.
Shoreditch yeah, or yeah. Dalston or places like the cliche of that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
whole thing. Apart from those places, that identity has remained the same
yeah.
since I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? In yeah, terms yeah. of the vibe of places. Of course, they all change
yeah.
and they evolve, but the sort of atmosphere of those different mm-hmm. neighbourhoods is the kind of a similar vibe. And I love that about London, about how there's such different feelings in different places. And so you're right, yeah. I mean, it's such a privilege to have grown up here because of, you know, to be a citizen of London, you kind of, you're in the world, really. The world isn't, you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like... It's such an amazing place in that way. And musically, you know, the pilgrimage was always, I said Jungle because that was the dominant thing at the time I was buying records. But sometimes I walk through Soho and I look at the pavement and I think, I wonder how many times I've stepped on this spot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wonder how many times I've walked through here because it used to be like Unity, Black Market, Soul Jazz, Mr. Bongo, Wild Pitch, yeah. Release yeah, the Groove,
yeah. Wild
Reckless.
Pitch, fucking hell, yeah.
Reckless as well.
You know, yeah. And all of those shops deserve a huge amount of credit,
yeah.
Especially the people working in them. Because, yeah. You know, they're the OG version of the you might like. Yeah, customers yeah. also yeah. bought
tastemakers, I guess. Yeah. They're the ones they're who the... come in, they play the tune and they go, yeah, yeah, we'll take
they're 50. The tastemakers of the tastemakers.
Yeah.
Every single DJ that you'd look up to and respect would be walking in there and getting a pile that was hand curated yeah, by yeah. someone working in those stores, you know. So yeah, I used to spend at least two days a week going record shopping, mm-hmm. you know. I think when you get to that age where you fall in love with records, as it was for me at that time, it's like your version of drugs, isn't it? You do anything to kind of you're obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like you'd sooner buy records than you would eat a good meal, you know. But yeah, I think a lot of that music was actually quite innovative at the time as well. You know, a lot of the sort of beat making that was going on in the UK and stuff like yeah. that. So it was all feeding into each other, wasn't it?
Yeah, man.
You know. You had this kind of amazing melting pot of being able to go out. And I started going out very, very young. So it started for me, I don't know, I was going out at 14, 15, hearing, you know, DJs and just like a sponge, just soaking it up, you know. And then Blue Note just blew everything out the water. Yeah. That was like Monday night. You could go see Abashanti there. You could go to Stealth. Go to the Mowax night, go to Giles Peterson's night, go to obviously Metalheads. You know, there were so many things at that space. And then you had Bagley's and you had The Cross and you had all these just like, you know, amazing club experiences. So I think I'm a child of clubs and radio, basically. That's
fucking
my
hell. It shows how important
school.
It shows how important it is just to go out raving and
yeah.
for you, for when you listen to you, being a fan of what you do. That makes perfect sense because you literally just went out there and soaked it all in. And,
yeah.
and it's such a simple act. You're just going out. You're just going out yeah. and viewing it in a way. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Listening, that's all. But it's so important.
But for me, it wasn't like the socializing aspect of it was a welcome bonus.
Bonus,
but it wasn't
yeah.
the primary thing to get me out.
Wow.
Because you'd go to hear stuff that you didn't already know. Of course, like if you heard your favorite tune, then that is amazing as yeah. well. Like that's yeah. great. But you'd also go because you knew that, you know, so-and-so was going to cut some new dub that was, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
That's my university, basically. That's the university yeah. that I went to.
Tunes would break in a rave rather than,
yeah.
like, now online or whatever. And
yeah, and on pirate radio, yeah.
Yeah, 100%, man, yeah.
But I remember hearing songs in a rave and they're straight away going, like, I don't know the name of it, anything, but I need to get that on vinyl. And I'm not going to DJ to anyone, but in my bedroom,
yeah.
I need that tune.
Same, exactly the same. I was, you know, I'd go into Unity Records and be like the cliche of the guy singing the tune or saying yeah, the yeah. name of the tune, and they'd
yeah,
be yeah. like, "Stop listening to Kiss FM or whatever." You
yeah,
know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Because in those days, tunes wouldn't come out till a year after, you know.
Yeah. So, Hugo, what did you do in a record shop once?
I just said. Have you got that tune, Jipe Funk, or whatever? And then they all started laughing and were like, Hype Funk. And they got everyone in the shop laughing at me.
But that's how you'd have to do it. You'd have to like just sing the bass line or the little sample or anything.
Yeah, yeah. I remember as well doing, I've forgotten the name of it, you know, Wom, Wom, Wom,
yeah, yeah,
doing
yeah,
that
yeah.
to them.
Timo Mass.
Yeah
yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, here you go.
I swear I'm like the human Shazam.
Yeah,
let's do that. Let's do some Shazam. I'll give me some tunes and I'll human Shazam them.
All right then.
A 1-3-8 track.
There we go. You go.
We can get down.
Myron, Get Down, Groove Chronicles remix.
Fucking hell! Yeah. I thought I was going to throw you off. That is sick.
Is this a skill set? Could I get employed with this skill set or no?
Yeah.
Do mastermind.
I mean,
do you
if the world,
Magnus Magnuson?
I think if the world's now a different place and we all need to learn new skills, I think that could come in handy.
Human Shazam.
Yeah. Maybe that's how the government want you to retrain.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. In HMV going, go on, sing it.
Hold up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. Right about now, you are locked into the legendary Chat and Shit podcast, lad. With Alan Seep and Mustafa, Hugo Chegwin, and a nice little special guest.
Yeah, so Benji, so it went from, obviously, yeah, you soaking all this in. So when did you first start playing out, I guess? When did it start becoming something that could possibly be a career choice?
I used to dream about it. I used to dream about playing out. And I think, like most people, the first time I played out, I didn't have two turntables at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, having two turntables, you had to basically be loaded.
Yeah, of course. you know what I mean?
Or be very lucky or whatever. So I remember having a turntable at home and listening to music. And then the first time, and understanding the concept of what it would be to DJ, but the first time actually doing it was in front of people. So it's like learning to swim by being thrown in the Pacific. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, so go. I DJed at a place called The Dome in Tufnell Park. And I think I was like 15 or whatever. And
how did you get that?
I got this mixer.
And how did that come around though?
I think it was something to do with college, my sixth form college. Right. I think it was something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't exactly remember. It wasn't a cool night or anything. It wasn't like a public facing, like cool night where I managed to get myself a gig. It was some, you know, people doing their A-levels. Kind of thing.
Talent show.
Exactly. No, all I remember about that gig was that the gig couldn't exist until I got the DJ Zinc remix of Fuji's Ready or Not.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that being a thing in my head. Like, I don't care what I play for the rest of the hour set or 2 hour set or however long it was, but that I need that tune sort of thing. And I remember queuing up on a Saturday morning outside probably Black Market or somewhere like that. And there was a guy with a van that would arrive with the white labels, you know, and I remember getting the tune. And in my head, nothing could go wrong with that gig because I had
this
that
set
tune.
Is sorted now. You know what I
mean? So I learned on my feet and I did a couple of gigs like that. And then I remember eventually I did get two decks, of course. And I remember once at Blue Note, Patrick from DJ Food, which was basically an extension of Cold Cut. They had a night called Stealth at the Blue Note.
Yep.
And he needed to go, he needed to go to the toilet. And he looked at me and I was sitting on the stage and he looked at me and he said, what BPM is this? Right? And this is like a long time before I had even considered BPMs or anything like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just said 100. Yeah. I just guessed and I just said 100. And he picked out the sleeve and it had a little sticker he'd written on it and it said 100 on it, right? And he was like, well done, you're up.
Raw.
And I had to get up and DJ on stage at the Blue Note using his records.
Wait, had you only DJed to Jungle before that or at home you'd basically experimented
with
everything?
No, I played everything. Yeah. I played everything. Yeah. I didn't just buy Jungle. I was going out a lot to Jungle. But
of course,
I was buying jazz, hip-hop, whatever. Old stuff, new stuff, everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I did that, and I remember that being a total baptism of fire. I remember standing up there and just absolutely shitting it. Like, not only am I DJing in the coolest club in London, but I'm also playing out of someone else's record box. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where you kind of don't want it to stop, but you can't wait for him to get back.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like playing a football match when you're younger. Like, I wouldn't want someone to pass me the ball ever. But if I did get it, then I'd be like, oh, fuck it, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
If it went well, like, sick. I love football.
But it's the ultimate thinking on your feet, isn't it? Like what we were talking about earlier. Him throwing you in the deep end, you're using his records, and you just got to come up with something.
But at that time, like you're saying, where does it all get started? I mean, like, all I thought about was records. Yeah. You know, I often say to people, like, now, you have to be in love with records.
Yeah.
You have to be in love with, you know, you can't just be in love with the idea of DJing. You have to be in love with the records.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and that's not something that changes. You know, I'm the opposite of the person that says, oh, it was better when you had to go across London to find one record. No, it wasn't. That was shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's really long.
Yeah.
It's really cool that I could say, oh, check this tune out, and you'd be like, get it. But it does make you have a different relationship with the music, and that's a whole conversation.
Of course,
that you could do a whole podcast about. But whatever the era is, the principle remains the same. You have to be in love with the music itself.
Just being a massive fan of the music, and the best DJs are, I mean, look at like One Man, you know, people like that. They're just
One Man, technically unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, obviously One Man, you know, Steve is gifted to start with. But you can't just rely on the gift. Like, someone that DJs as well as he does has spent tens of thousands of hours doing it.
100%.
You know what I mean? It's like, and when you hear him play, it's amazing.
Just like you, tens of thousands of hours listening to loads of different tunes and becoming obsessed with different genres and trying to understand them. There's not a lot of DJs that do that, you know, and that's the only reason I brought him up in this conversation, because of what you're talking about with the, you know, crossing genres and understanding it all.
And his confidence as well. Like, One Man will drop, like, he'll play grime, but then he'll drop an African Fela Kuti beat in there. Mm-hmm. And like, a lot of DJs might be afraid to do that. Like, I would be afraid. Yeah.
I was just in love with that culture. I was in love with record shops. I was in love with the community of it, because the community of it is as important as anything else. Yeah. And because I didn't always have mates at the time that had the same taste, sometimes I did, you know, but a lot of the time when I was at school, I was in a different place to where people were musically. Yeah. You know, I was on my own wave. And so I'd go out alone a lot, and I'd go out alone knowing who would be there is what I mean. So you were never alone, because the community of people that went to those nights religiously, whether it be weekly or monthly, was your sort of extended musical family, and then through them you'd get to know more. So
it becomes your community. Yeah, but like, yeah, I think it's definitely really important though that I mean, it's probably was a lesson in the fact that, you know, I mean, being a DJ, you do have to be on your own two feet. You're not sort of reliant, you're not in a band. Do you know what I mean? And like, doing that from an early age probably built you in that way. Do you know what I mean?
I felt that community, especially not me, but my friend who's a producer, Harry Craze, he used to go to a lot of dubstep nights, and he would go on his own. Sometimes I'd go with him, but every time he was there, he'd just bump into so many people.
Well, Forward and DMZ and places like that are a perfect example of...
Like Mala, those guys.
Scenes
like,
that are as strong as that, you're not going to see the same couple of people. You're going to see the same 100 people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're going to see... You know, I always used to say when I started my night in London that the biggest compliment that I could get was the fact that people would be there on their off night to check out music and to talk. You know, so when you look out and you'd get producers and DJs or artists, musicians, whatever, just coming down to hang out and check out music, there is no greater compliment than that.
100%, So let's talk about that. Let's talk about Deviation. Like, how did that start? And when did that start in your sort of journey?
Started in 2007.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, another cliche that people say is, if you don't read the book that you want to read, write it. Or if you don't see the film you want to see, or in your case, if there's not the sitcom on TV that you'd like, make it, you know. And that was true, you know, cliche as it might be, that was true for me. It was like, at that time, I felt like there was a gap for what I wanted to hear. there was a club in London called Plastic People that we found ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was loads of great stuff happening. Obviously, there was Forward, there was Yo-Yo, there was like loads of cool stuff. But in terms of what I wanted to do, like I was doing a radio show on One Extra at the time.
Yeah.
I started my show on One Extra in 2002 when the station launched. And
sorry to interrupt. So how did you get into that? How did you get onto One Extra then?
Well, I was asked at the time. I got two calls, basically. One was before the station started. I got a call asking if I'd like to come and help build the station from a production angle.
Right.
And sort of oversee it because I had quite a lot of experience in radio already by then.
Yeah.
It was already my life. You know, I was doing production and I'd have spent a lot of time in the radio environment.
Okay.
And so I was asked to do if I wanted to do that. And then I got another call from a different exec asking if I wanted to do a show. And because of BBC rules, I don't know if it's still the same, but at that time, you're not allowed to produce and present because it's like a conflict of interest, right?
Yeah.
So I went and started and did production and helped with a lot of things on that side and then started doing a show,
right?
Basically. So yeah. I'd worked in radio. I worked in and around Kiss FM at the end of the 90s. What? And then...
When it was a pirate or when it had changed?
No. It changed in 1990.
Right.
So it had already been legal a long time.
Yeah.
But just to dial it back a minute, in that era that you're talking about, Kiss FM in the mid-90s, right in the middle, like 95, 96, was the best legal radio station by miles.
Yeah.
Like you had, well, jungle-wise, you had everyone. Obviously, you had Fabian Grooverider and they were already sort of breaking away doing the drum and bass thing on Fridays. But Wednesdays, you had like Frost, Kenny Ken.
I remember, man. Yeah, Bookham,
You know, you name it there. Yeah. You know. And then obviously I had Max Alex and Davey J doing the hip hop show, Steve Jackson, Bobby and Steve doing House, Cold Cut, Jazzy B, Colin Dale, really underrated. Colin Dale, amazing. Rodigan for a time, I believe, before Capital.
Yeah.
Joey J, Norman J's brother.
Okay.
And Giles Peterson.
Yeah.
Who basically whose show I taped religiously every week and then got involved with producing his show from 96
that makes a lot of sense, man. I always say you're like, you know, our generation's Giles Peterson, man. So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
To have that access to those DJs that were that credible, I mean, all the people I just mentioned were like spearheads of their own scene in different ways.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to have that mixed with the London Pirates, you know, was an amazing... That's my school, you know, that's the school I went to.
Yeah.
Before, I never went to university. After A-levels, last day of A-levels was my first day of work. I went to work at a production company where we produced shows for, like, all different stations, commercial and BBC. And so I had a bit of background in, I just wanted to be in and around radio. When I think about it through this conversation, I've basically been in a live radio studio every week since I was 16, which is
even now
yeah, I just did the show till
lockdown. It's your own one.
Yeah,
I just did the show, which is weird because you just mentioned Action Bronson.
Yeah,
and we were talking about The Wire.
Yeah,
and literally like 2 minutes before we started, I just finished the show, and the first track on Action Bronson's album has a sample of The Greek from The Wire.
Yeah, man. Well, that's how it came up. He was talking it because his producer name is The Greek. So if he finds us, I mean, not he doesn't make beats, but if he finds a sample or anything and Al flips it or Derringer flips it or whatever, then his credit on it is The Greek, innit? So that's probably why he's used that sample.
Knowledge.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So I started on One Extra in 2002. I basically got offered to start my own show and
amazing.
I'd wanted that forever. So
that was the first moment where you stepped from behind the scenes, basically, right?
Well, I think I'd done a bit of covering before.
Right.
And, you know, I'd done it. I used to do a hell of a lot of ghost DJing for people.
Yeah, I've done
ghost DJing. I've never heard that, man.
It's like what I was telling you about the other day that I had to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like, no one can ever talk about that. That's like the dressing room secrets kind of vibe.
But
I used to do a lot of compilations and do mixes for people and stuff like that, you know, and all of that because I was that kid, whiz kid kind of, like, you know, you've got that when you're at that age where you've just got that magic, and you've kind of got that encyclopedic knowledge of what's going on, and you can DJ, and you can understand like technology, and
exactly.
You know, you're just at that stage where you're just.
I'm gonna get that on a CD.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Benji's put all the fucking work in. Get him to do it.
As long as you play these,
you joke, Hugo. But that is literally something that would be said.
I'm sure.
So I'd already done a lot of that, and then I got asked to be on One Extra, which was a dream. I think that, you know, what was really interesting is like in the 90s, Radio 1 wasn't cool, you know, at all.
No.
And then obviously towards the end, they got like Pete Tong and Westwood, and then they slowly started to get, you know, people revamp. And then Charles and the revamp and everything. But I think that nevertheless, you know, if you're a footballer, you know, it's Real Madrid, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's like... That's in the back of your mind. Radio 1 was always that. So I think that subconsciously, anyone that's on the radio wants to be on the biggest station in Europe. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, so for me, I did 8 years at One Extra from 2002 until 2010. And this week celebrated 10 years on Radio 1.
Fucking congrats, mate. That's amazing. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I didn't even know, to be honest. Someone texted me and said, congratulations on 10 years. I didn't know.
Benji, how did where did the producing come into it then? Like, as in producing tracks, because didn't you do stuff with Kanye?
Yeah, yeah.
So how did that all come about? And I'm a
Kanye stan.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in 2011, I got a call from his team to go and work on what would become the start of Yeezus.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much based on my show, I think. You know, like, and they wanted specifically at that time, they were, you know, really into wanting some vibes on Detroit techno and Chicago house, of which I've got, you know, got for days. But that then sort of like totally morphed and developed into a much wider involvement based on my whole musical taste and stuff like that. So, yeah, I flew out to Vegas in 2011 when they were in the middle of the Watch the Throne tour and literally landed like half an hour before the gig. And that was my introduction to the whole thing.
Wait, and you had no link to it all before? That just came out of just, that was your
first... Well, basically, I think Virgil, who was working with him as creative director at the time and, you know, was a fan of the show and had emailed me a lot. And so, and had contacted the show back and forth. But that was my first time meeting him,
Wow.
Man, how powerful that obsession with just listening to loads of different types of music and, you know, being the best in your craft just gets people looking at you. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're literally doing it for the love of the music, and then someone from a completely different world
just sort of... Well, at the time, the people in those rooms, you wouldn't believe it. You know what I mean? The people that you just walk in the morning, and not just music either. From every field, what I mean? Whether it be film, fashion, sports, whatever.
That, Russell Crowe, Sci High, the Prince. Just, what the fuck?
The thing is that's the thing that, by, you know, when you go out there, you think, oh, I'm not quite sure what to expect. And the thing that you can expect is exactly what you just said, which is that passion for music is the thing that binds everyone in that room.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone's got a common thing, which is just living and breathing music, you know. So when you play like a sick sample or a new James Blake song or something that's interesting, the whole room's like, whoa, what's that? Do you know what I mean? It's amazing. It was an amazing environment, and it continued through to the Pablo record. And
Wow, man, that's crazy.
I mean, we could do a whole podcast on that, but
Yeezus album has some like just unexpected, well, I guess Kanye is always unexpected, but like Arca on it, and
and Hudmo,
Hudmo, and there's, who's the other English producer on there?
Evian Christ.
Sick.
Yeah, it was a really, really important cast. What I respect about it is that I'd play a Hudmo track and they'd be like, instead of going, let's make something like this, they'd go, call him. Do you know what I mean? So instead of going, oh, let's use this as a mood board to rip it off, they'd be like, call that guy.
Let's get the best people in that field.
It was a blessing. Like, for me, it was an opportunity to witness creation at the highest level with some of the best minds in the world, where every idea is valid. You know, people are coming to the table with all sorts of different things.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. and a lot of it didn't make it, and some of it did, you know. But it's loads of tunes that never made it, you know.
Like an open, non-judgmental, creative atmosphere. You know what I mean?
100%.
That's incredible.
I mean, if you brought something whack, it was definitely judgmental.
Yeah. Lucky you're all fucking sick. Like, it's very non-judgmental, yeah, but we get the sickest people in the world.
but you're right, though. It's like you could come with, you know, there's no such thing as a bad idea. It's just like, what works? Let's try it. Try things out and stuff.
Wow.
That felt like the cutting edge. And then the last 2 weeks of it, the sort of most intense 2 weeks before it came out, were at Shangri-La, which is Rick Rubin's studio in Malibu. And that was just unbelievable because there wasn't many people then. Before, there was just loads of people all the time. And then it was like Mike Dean, Hudmo, Arca, Noah and me and a couple of others. And
that does sound like X Factor, everyone getting cut out every week. You're there at the finals.
Randomly, Mike Dean's a fan of our show, man. He messaged
Mike Dean's a G. Shout out to Mike Dean.
Yeah, he follows us.
That's weird, man.
Mike Dean's amazing.
And then so I'm assuming it's because Virgil listened to your show that you then got involved with all the Louis Vuitton stuff then.
Yeah, well we've been friends for years and you know, I've DJed together for years and I've invited him to come and play at my club various, and he's been a fan of the radio show and the nightclub and the night, I should say, for years.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been to a night, man.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah. I went like,
which one?
It was about 3 years ago. My friend Josh is a massive fan of yours and Deviation Nights.
You're about to say a massive Benji B fan.
I went to one in Jazz Cafe in Camden.
Yeah,
sick, man. Had a really good time, good vibe. Everyone was super friendly. Like, I'd never heard a lot of the music before, but it was, I really enjoyed myself, man.
Wicked. That's good to hear.
Yeah, it was a vibe.
I remember doing a night in Jazz Cafe, but I'm gonna go with
it. Well, it definitely was a Deviation Night. It might not have been Jazz Cafe.
No, it might have been a different venue.
I remember I got waved.
Maybe that's why you thought it was Jazz Cafe.
Yeah.
Good night.
But, no, shout out Jazz Cafe.
Or maybe I went to the wrong venue. It was a good vibe though.
Mad, it's like 13 years or 14 years or something. Well, it's 2007 to 2020. Yeah, 13 years. 13th birthday this week. Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's what you were asking me, wasn't it? About 2007, starting the night.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that good in London, so we started it. And basically, to answer that question quickly, I wanted to do a sort of physical version, a night of my radio show. I wanted to be able to play the music that I was playing on the radio out, and there was nowhere that I could really do that properly, and I wanted to have a residency. And so you asked like ages ago before we went onto radio, and then, but you said like, you know, what made you do it? And it's important because it's the same thing as like radio. It's like having all the DJs that I rated when I was a kid, or let's say a lot of them, maybe not all of them, had a residency of some kind. And having a residency is really amazing as a DJ because it allows you to, first of all, have your own environment where you can really dictate what the tone is.
Yeah.
But it also makes you better because it's like doing push-ups. You know, it's like sharpening the diamond or whatever the phrase is. It's like, you know, you have to be good. And also your crowd don't suffer fools gladly, including you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You can't just roll out the same shit from last week. And so it gave me a chance to really play what I was getting, you know, direct from artists and from the radio and everything. And it became too successful for the small place it was, basically, which is a shame because the intimacy of that place was amazing. And that was also part of the magic when it was at Gramophone. But yeah, it's been going a long time now. We're not monthly anymore. We did monthly for exactly 10 years, which is an amazing achievement because that's hard.
Yeah.
And then now it's kind of like, well, now it's never because of COVID-19. Yeah, yeah.
You have to go illegal, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Go fully illegal, man.
Listen, man, when it's back on, man, we got to roll through, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Please do. No, but hopefully we will be able to do all of that again soon. I mean, it's too much now, man.
No.
Come on.
Next year, man. We got this. 2021 is everyone's year.
Wow, DJ Ostrich, why you stop the show? Well, I'll tell you, bro, this is the most important part. It's the question everybody wants to know. No, it is not what is your favorite jean fit. No, it is not what is your favorite size inch television. It's what is your favorite sandwich? Is it chicken? Is it salami? Is it cheese? Is it ham? Is it pickle? Is it jam? These are all questions I'm sure you are thinking. But right now you're gonna find out on the Chatting Shit podcast. Yeah, baby, come on.
Hey, listen, man. Look, there's so much we can talk about. But, you know, like, we're obviously running out of time. And like you say, maybe we can do a part two and shit, man.
I listened to a Joe Rogan podcast the other day. It was 3.5 hours.
Bruv, I know. Yeah. Yeah. He don't give a fuck anymore. He's just going for it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
Long form. Like, when I listened to Rick Rubin talking to Andre 3000.
Yeah.
And it was like 45 minutes. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, yeah. don't stop.
I want more,
like,
of this. Yeah.
I could do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's got Irishman sort of style. I want every podcast to be like The Irishman.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, Andre 3000 talking to Rick Rubin is slightly more of a draw than us three talking, but nevertheless.
Andre should go on Rogan.
Listen, it's all relative, isn't it?
It's all relative.
Yeah. Listen, man, one of the most important parts of the show, Benji, the whole nation wants to know, is what's your favourite sandwich?
I might really disappoint here.
Go on.
I know.
Because if I really, like, I just, what just happened in the short circuit of my brain, the CPU in my brain, was that I immediately tried to draw for, like, loads of sophisticated answers to that question.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But if I really search my inner me, my deep inner soul, it's a cheese and tomato sandwich.
I knew you was going to say, as soon as you said you're going to do
it. It's a cheese and tomato sandwich with a bit of lettuce. Like just, but, like maybe, like, nice cheese. I don't know. Cheese, tomato, and a bit of lettuce with a bit of mayo. And maybe, if I'm feeling really fancy, a bit of whole grain mustard or something in there or whatever.
Yeah. And what type of bread?
That could even be on, like, a really basic, like...
Like Hovis white.
Like white, white baguette.
Warburton.
Like, oh, baguette white. Like, yeah, I got you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like one of those kind of, like, squashy ones.
Yeah, 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 from, like, yeah, yeah.
Mark's, I don't know.
Got, like, a bit of chew on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
That sounds like a nostalgic piece, though. That sounds
a definite nostalgic piece. You know what that is? That's a sort of, like, driving my Golf back from a gig looking for, like, a service station sort of
thing. Yeah, yeah.
That's what that one is. But I think there's a bit of guilty pleasure in that. There's, like, I'm not mad at that sandwich.
No, do you know what? And my nostalgia piece is a bone dry cheese sandwich that's just fucking toasted brown bread, really, like, almost burnt, with blocks of cheddar in the middle, no sauce.
That sounds like any airport in Central Europe.
Put me in any airport in Central Europe and I'm happy.
The three questions.
And now for the last part of the show, Benji, and actually probably the most important part, more important than the sandwich, you've got to ask us three questions each.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Basically, maybe like about us.
30. Yeah. Well, let's talk about radio, because, you know, I can only assume that to make a show that is sort of making fun of pirate radio on some level has to come from a deep love for it. Do you
100%.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so talk to me about the format of radio and why that's important to you both, and
for me,
and what influence that's had on you.
For me, my journey with radio was... So the sort of garage and jungle thing was, like, really big for me. And I was more into sort of, like, emulating garage MCs, but spitting my own jungle lyrics and that. And I remember this one guy at school called Reich, MC X-Flow. Shout out X-Flow.
Nice, Reich Star.
Yeah, Reich Star told me about this local pirate station called Rampage FM. But he was younger than me and he used to talk a lot. So I was like, nah, he's chatting shit. He's like, nah, I'll take you down there. I was like, nah. And then... At this point, because it was at Effingham Junction before, but at this point, they'd moved to basically pretty much on my road, but on a gypsy site.
Yeah.
And so I ended up basically going down there with him. There was no DJ for me. I was going on after, like, this guy called Steve Ye's garage set. And I used a DJ Hype instrumental mix and just did, like, an hour jungle emceeing on my own. And then, basically just had a set on there. And then after about a year, they got spun and it started getting hectic and hot. And Steve, the guy that ran it, basically just stopped running it. So my mate Reich, who's the guy that took me there, his mum moved out the council flat he lived in because she got a fella and moved into some house or whatever. He was left with a flat. He's like 17 years old with his flat, electricity running through it and that on an estate. And we ended up starting our own station from there called Corrupt FM. And Yeah, man, you start putting aerials and that, like running sets from there. Did that for a couple of years, and that so that whole lifestyle was my life for, like, you know, 3 or 4 years basically.
Wait a sec, are you telling me this for real, that the show's name is based on something that you really did?
Yeah, and I mean, not the character.
I never knew that.
The characters were more people that we'd have met or whatever. And,
no,
but, you know,
course,
what I mean?
But the name was something that you actually did.
Yeah, yeah, man. Because we was well into Dog Pound. We was well into, like, apart from like Jungle and Garage and that, we was really into like old Snoop and Dog Pound and that. And it was Corrupt, innit? Corrupt and Daz. So we're like, yeah, Corrupt FM, and that's where that comes from, basically.
That's amazing.
Mad, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, like you with tape packs and, like, sets, garage sets and jungle sets. I don't know, like, it was school. I connected with it. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I remember asking my uncle, because my aunt she was a Radio 1 DJ, actually.
Oh, shout her out, man. She was a legend.
Yeah, Janice Long. And
no way.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No way. You know what's funny? When we were talking earlier, not to interrupt you, but okay, just right, as an aside for this, when I said no one really listened to... Radio 1 wasn't cool back then, right? Then everyone would listen to Kiss and... Well, certainly where I was in London, they would listen to Pirates and Kiss, certain... You know, Kiss was the only legal station, da, 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 da. I didn't get to the end of that sentence. I was going to say, with two honourable exceptions. Obviously, one being John Peel,
yeah,
and the other being Janice.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, because those were the two Don credible broadcasters on that station for music heads.
Amazing.
Yeah.
100%.
And she paved the way for female DJs as well.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Inspirational. Like, when I was younger, house was full of CDs, records, and my uncle used to, like, make music in some capacity. I've never heard it, but, like, seeing all the equipment and the keyboards and all the records and stuff, like, they were my sort of go-to. If I had a question about music or whatever, I would always ask them. And I remember I had a tape and I was playing it in my uncle's car, and I was like, what are they doing? Like, how are they doing this? And he explained to me that they had two turntables, and I was like, fuck, that's amazing. And then he had a magazine, like an equipment magazine, and he showed me where they were on the back. And then as soon as I saw them, I was like, I need decks. I need these ASAP. And I got some real cheap ones. But as soon as I started getting vinyls and stuff, I was like, I want to be on a pirate radio station like those people that I listen to. And I was never on a good one, ever. Like, but I did, I was on one called Major FM.
Shout out Major FM, man.
Yeah, like a sort of a bit of a crack house.
Was that under the Shutters?
Actually, that was in an old phone shop, but then there was one called... Reload FM. And that was in the crack house, yeah.
That's it, yeah, yeah. Is that where you pissed in the corner?
Yeah. That was sick, though. That was my entry into the pirate radio land.
That's amazing.
But it was fascinating. And the characters, I guess, from the show... in some capacity.
People we've met along the way.
Yeah, definitely.
Parts of it, yeah. Yeah, man. What, question two, Benji?
Well, your characters say that your characters are, like, so hardcore, like, we don't mess with anything that's not garage, right?
Yeah.
So you don't do, you like... So in that case, what top three garage tunes? Like, there's a fire and you can only save three from the entire genre.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay, so mine would be number one, Standard Hoodlum Issue. The remix, the
deep ones,
yeah.
Like a snake,
yeah, that one's hard, yeah, because I could just, you know, like, as an MC from, you know, I know I'm not really now, but that's what, when that comes on, I just want to spit. Do you know what, probably 138 Trek as well, because that's just,
yep.
Do you know what I mean,
crossover,
yeah exactly, and that was one of my favorite era, actually, that crossover era. And I always say this, but probably Bass Lick VIP remix, man. Just kind of epic.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play.
What about you, Hugo?
Mine would be Hobson's Choice.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yep.
Pulse X.
Oh, man, yeah.
Of course. Another crossover.
Yeah.
Arguably the birth of another genre.
Yeah, it's true.
100%. Yeah.
Like, shuts any rave down.
Till this day.
Yeah. Never gone out of style, in my opinion. And... maybe Dem 2 Destiny.
Oh, good one.
Destiny.
Definition of two-step, that one.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Hard.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm fine with those answers.
Yeah. bury me.
Sounded like you were convincing yourself.
Yeah, it was. I was like, oh, maybe there are some others.
Talking to Benji B, worrying that it's not obscure enough.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm trying to think of like a silly question now. All right, favorite trainer silhouette of all time?
Do you know what? It's kind of easy for me now at the moment because it's all I've been wearing. And I know Air Max 95s, man.
95s.
Yeah.
Air Max 95s.
Yeah, for me, it's just...
Yeah. Fair play.
Timeless.
It's timeless. It's something I grew up on. It represents a time for me, but it's still valid now. It's a solid trainer. It's a boot. Do you know what I mean? And it's got some sick colorways. So that's me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say it as well.
A little Stussy remix.
Oi.
As well.
Yeah. Oi.
Sick. Amazing. Brilliant. Wait, listen, man. Thank you so much for coming on. The last question we ask all of our guests is: are you our new best mate?
Obviously.
Come on, man, like Benji B, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, man. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
Easy. How you feeling?
Yeah, good, man. That was a journey. I feel like I know so much about Benji B now.
I know, man. Yeah. Solid gold.
Solid gold, platinum.
Yeah.
Double disc.
Exactly. Double D's.
Yeah.
No, not double discs. Disc. But yeah, man. Big up Benji B, man. I learned so much. It was an amazing conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Look out for his radio show. Obviously, legendary. I mean, you must know about Benji B. Once Deviation, once his nights are back on, make sure you hit the nights. We'll be down there chilling.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably every week. Yeah.
In Air Max 95s.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Big it up, you lot, man. Make sure you keep it locked, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Hey, yo! Will everyone shut the fuck up? I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
No, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendie.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout out all the posse down at ACAS Laboratory. Hip hop, hip hop. Am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.